Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real engineers get to talk about networking. Today, in this Priority Queue show, Priority Queue is our special features feed where we do specialist topics where we go deep diving with the hardest of the hardcore. We go off of the offbeat and niche into the content in the weirdest way that we possibly can. You might know me, I'm Greg Farrow, and you can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com. And joining me today to co-host is Brent Salisbury. How are you today, Brent?
Doing well. How are you, Greg?
I'm awake, if only barely. It's two sleeps until I've got no more work for Christmases. Yay, me!
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah. So, I've got to grind through two more slide decks and I'm done for the year myself.
I'm checking out. I've got no leftovers because I'm transitioning between jobs. We're recording this on the 19th of December. Of course, you can find Brent on his blog at Network Static and he's on the Twitters as at Network Static. And joining us today, Michael Howe. Michael, why don't you introduce yourself to the peoples at home?
All right. Thank you, Greg. It's great to be on the show with you and Brent. I've been a fan of your show for quite a long time. I am a senior manager of market development for Ixia. Ixia is a leader in test and measurement. I also serve as the testing interop chair for the Open Networking Foundation. And just a quick bit on my background is I started my career with IBM Global Service back in the mid-90s as a network engineer working on our frame and ATM multi-protocol and IP routed networks, moved into test engineering for IBM, and went and got my CCIE back in 1999. And in early 2000, AT&T acquired the IBM Global Services Network, so I became part of AT&T Labs. I was doing tests, and then now I've been in the test industry for about 10 years.
So thanks very much for joining us, Mike. So we wanted to, as part of our series of shows at the Packet Pushers, talking a little bit more about the Open Networking Foundation and some of what's actually happening inside of. Because as many of you know, the Packet Pushers has been following the OpenFlow story, and the Open Networking Foundation is the shepherd of the future standards in that sort of body. And Michael came to talk to us a little bit about what's going on in the testing and interoperability working group. So why don't you explain a little bit about the role of the ONF, Mike, and how testing and interop fits into the ONF's format?
You know, the ONF announced itself back in March of 2011, and then shortly after that, Ixia, you know, became aware of it as the company I represent and joined the ONF in May. And they had a work day in the following June and asked Ixia to come up and present on testing, just to kind of run a session and get some feedback on the impact of testing and how that could work with OpenFlow. So we came up and presented on three main topics, and that was interoperability testing, certification testing, and then benchmarking. And those three topics were well received. And so essentially, those were the foundations of the charter of the working group that was started shortly after that, and since we've been chairing that working group. So with interoperability, we've been facilitating that through PlugFest. Our goal has been to at least host two PlugFest events a year. And so I'll be talking to you guys in some detail about that. And then in the area of certification, we're working on a conformance program so vendors can actually go through certification and ensure they're meeting and following the guidelines set out by the ONF. And finally, with benchmarking, it's basically just defining methodologies. So it's kind of like IETF's working group, benchmarking working group, but basically defining methodologies so you can have apples-to-apples comparison when you look at performance metrics.
Maybe it's also worth having a bit of a quick introduction to what the testing and interop working group does. Is it literally organizing plug fests and validating? So vendors drag along their kit, give it to the working group, and they go, pass us the test suite, bless this as conformant, ship it.
There is that element of it. The first kind of way vendors get involved in is through the plug fests. And with the plug fests, we're basically, the ONF is helping to facilitate just testing to see where the device stands. You know, is it working when connected and interconnected to other OpenFlow-enabled devices? Is it working with the controller and application that's running? And then we run various applications. So those take part through the PlugFest events that occur. The second component we're working on is actual certification, where we have selected a lab at this point. You guys have had Matt Davey on from Indiana University, who's they run the in-center lab, and I'm not sure if you followed the ONF announcement that the in-center lab was selected as a certification lab. So it's not exclusive, but they are the only lab selected at this point. And they're currently running our pilot phase of certification for OpenFlow 1.0. So in that case, vendors would bring in their device, a set of tests, and then be determined to be compliant or not to the, or I should say, conformant or not to the ONF specification.
Hey, Michael, so where does that information go? These sound like really important things. Where can I see that information? So currently right now I'm kind of putting together for a grant we got awarded. So I'm trying to figure out what kind of hardware is going to fit in these particular areas. So how can testing and interop working group help me start putting these pieces together?
Yeah, Brent, that's a great question. That's exactly what we're looking to do, is have that information available so you can go and find it. And the issue is it's still in the fairly early stages. We have the process defined. The pilot phase was started about 2 months ago, and it did start a bit late. So we're working through the test cases and ensuring that we have a certification program that's meaningful. And we've had a lot of challenges and roadblocks along the way, because the way the 1.0 specification was written, it doesn't really clearly state mandatory and optional. And some of the things it infers as being mandatory are not widely implemented. So in that kind of churn of the test case creation and the validation, we're having to actually adopt and make some amendments to the 1.0 specification. So that's a long answer to say is eventually we will have a portal on the open networking .org website, the ONF's homepage, that lists vendors certification. Then you can understand who's been through the program. And then as a consumer of those products, you can ask that vendor for their detailed report to understand, you know, what mandatory, you know, how they did on the mandatory cases and how they did on the optional cases. And that's an important piece of this puzzle, is there are quite a few things that are considered optional. And, you know, as someone implementing an open flow network, you're going to need to know what match and action capabilities you have to work with.
And even getting granular is things like hybrid capabilities. You know, can I punt to the local network stack, or, you know, do I have to stay isolated off into the open flow pipeline? I just want to make sure I understand it. The testing part, the requirements will be posted, and then I would go to the vendor to get the granular results from the testing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, have kind of what devices made it through the certification, and then the pass will be a pass based on the mandatory test cases. We can't make everything mandatory because, you know, vendors have different viewpoints and implementations. So essentially, you know, you will have to look into some of the details, because if you want a feature like to do match and action on a packet in or packet out message going to and from the controller, certain things aren't to be mandatory. So I think, you know, the certification will set a bar in terms of, you know, equipment that is meeting the requirements and has a high probability of being interoperable with, you know, standards-based controllers. However, there is an element of the consumer of an open flow device will need to kind of dig into some of the details just to understand the feature sets that are fully supported.
I want to take a bit of a weird question here. One of the issues that I often get back from people who talk about testing equipment or talk about using OpenFlow-based devices is that the performance at which you can inject OpenFlow entries to a device. So that is literally how many OpenFlow entries can you push into a device per second to update the forwarding table. Do you do any testing around that at this time?
You know, through the ONF, that is one of the things we're looking at defining under the category of benchmarking. And, you know, what you're referring to is, you know, OpenFlow actually works from a messaging standpoint kind of similar to BGP, where the messages are carried over a TCP connection. So the update rate of a flow mod, which is doing something like a flow add, adding to your forwarding table, will be, you know, limited by the controller itself, as well as the TCP connection and how that's being windowed and how many messages are being sent. So we are looking at defining things like learning rate. And in some cases, the way that's a dynamic process, because if you're learning based on a MAC address learn or based on an ARP, there is a process like you would have with the layer 2 switch or layer 3 switch, where that learning packet has to go up to the controller, be processed, then a flow table entry is pushed down. So what we're actually looking at doing is benchmarking layer 2 learning speed, and assuming when you've learned, you have the controller has processed it, pushed it down to a forwarding table.
My major concern there from a design perspective is that we have a certain number of vendors who are implementing OpenFlow in a process switching path or in a software path. and their ability to take open flow entries and then load them into the actual silicon is actually very low. So I've heard vendors talk about, you know, 10 flows per second or 5 flows per second.
That's... Yeah, you know, it actually gets so much more complicated than that. I think that's where what we're seeing in the interop and in the interop plug fest we've done, we've tested things like layer 2 learning, layer 3 learning, even things like layer 2 and layer 3 provision, where you're actually building a static path and pushing. Interesting, because the actual forwarding performance can vary greatly. You could have a pure software-based device, something running on a, you know, on a PC platform that is acting as an open flow device, and so it's purely forwarding in software. You can have devices that do layer 2 in hardware, layer 3 in software. You can have devices that, you know, have different forwarding paths. One of the interesting things we saw in the second PlugFest was packets were making it across the network. However, the performance was really low. And what we found was the controller was not at the point it was at, it hadn't pushed the flow table entries down into hardware. So it was actually taking packet in up to the controller, determining the egress port, and actually forwarding the packet to the egress node. And so the controller was actually forwarding the packets across the network. So it can do that in the interim until it actually pushes down the flow. If you think of like multicast, where you kind of do multicasting, or you do unicast before you do a multicast, is actually doing that. So I think you're going to have a lot of varying performances.
Yeah, that's a problem. I mean, that you know, that punt process is going to be, some vendors are going to address it well, some vendors aren't. The ability to add new processes, add new flows to the database is going to be a key criteria. Some people are going to implement it on top of their existing and it's going to run like crap. So I can remember back in 1998, some vendors implemented their SNMP and they had a completely software process that was building the stats. And as soon as you started to do SNMP polling, their routers would fall over. They didn't have enough CPU. And I just can't help but wonder that OpenFlow's, I mean, that's a risk to OpenFlow, that if vendors produce sub-quality devices, that users will say, hey, this product is substandard, and walk away because the technology's flawed. But in fact, it's flawed technical implementations. SNMP was able to finally get over those humps, you know, sometime in the mid-2000s when we got hardware-enabled statistics collection in the silicon, and then the software agent was literally just polling the current statistics that were sitting in the interface chips. But that took years and years to reach any sort of stability. I mean, SNMP was a disaster in the late 1990s.
I think we'll start seeing more processing getting pushed down to the edge switch. So I think we'll start seeing systems on the chips that can have, you know, an embedded Linux running a controller and then orchestrated northbound of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I'm seeing a lot of is something, you know, very similar to what you're describing, is, you know, intelligence at the edge where a decision is made, you know, some processing is done, and then across the core, similar to like an MPLS network, not a lot of decisions are made, and you can forward in hardware across the core. So you have more of a high-performing transport network and more intelligence at the edge. And OpenFlow does, you know, facilitate that quite well. And, you know, you can have a vSwitch at the edge, and then you can have actually hardware-based devices in the middle, and those devices in the middle would have to do less things, because at the edge you could be pushing MPLS labels down, you could be modifying a MAC, you can be doing really modifying the packet, right? Where across the core you're just making a forwarding decision.
And that can be your legacy MPLS backbone, whatever, nail up pseudo wires.
Yeah, you could interwork OpenFlow with legacy networks. You can do tunneling over, you could actually map it to or MPLS-enabled forwarding network. And certainly I think we'll see more efforts around, you know, hybrid-style designs with OpenFlow and legacy networks interworking. In fact, the EANTC lab that does testing for MPLS and Ethernet World Congress and Carrier Ethernet World Congress is looking at test upcoming winter event here.
Carriers are going to demand software LSRs. And I think more than anybody, the service providers and the operators are going to be driving this more than anybody else. And I think it's purely the CapEx they put into hardware is significantly higher than hyperscale data centers. It's like, you know, the NFV document, I don't know if you've gotten a chance to review that, but it's pretty aggressive and it's pretty clear cut. I mean, these are the biggest of the big spenders on networking gear.
Yeah, I'm hearing from the carriers, I'm hearing, you know, use cases like, you know, looking at replacing the provider edge routers with an open flow enabled device that can actually do a lot of the policy enforcement at the edge and still leveraging an IP MPLS core. So if that's the case, then you certainly would have that interworking component, and you would have, you know, controllers that have to essentially interwork and assign MPLS labels based on the transport network they're connecting into.
Stuart Elby from Verizon, I think he articulates it the best from the service provider perspective with the last spring Open Networking Summit, just showed a simple diagram. This is how we want to scale things modularly. We're going to have x86, we're going to have some kind of low-cost commodity edge switch, and then we're going to have our core forwarding components. That's as articulate of a use case as I've seen. It'd be really helpful would be, here's how you build hybrid software-defined networks. So even throwing, you know, beyond just the testing and matrix support from vendors is, here's some topologies and here's some deployments that we've tested and we've validated.
Yeah, you know, in the interop events, we are helping to facilitate that kind of test. In fact, at the last event we did in October, there was a example where we had traditional routed network over an OpenFlow core. And that test was actually facilitated and run. It was mildly successful. I mean, it worked out fairly well. The problem was that particular implementation required specific actions on a packet, like modifying a MAC, that weren't supported by all the devices. So you get kind of limited in terms of, well, what devices support those actions at the edge. But certainly through the interoperability tests that we facilitate at the ONF, we are definitely looking at those kind of use cases, but it really depends on what the controller is bringing in, right? Because if you think about an OpenFlow network, you're just talking about devices that understand a command set. All the intelligence is really on the controller side. So it's the controller implementations and applications will be, you know, determining what the network is able to do.
What controller was used for that, Michael?
In that particular case, it was a controller, an NTT controller. So NTT participated both as NTT communications as well as NTT data. NTT data is a subset that they actually develop their own controller, their own applications, and then they can work with various devices, including vSwitches.
Part of the reason I'm concerned about the OpenFlow load is that I'm starting to hear whispers of firewall applications written in OpenFlow, and they need a very high level of performance to be able to load. So they need that punt processor as well as the ability to do very large numbers of OpenFlow updates to the forwarding table. And that's one of the areas where we really could use OpenFlow to be much better.
Yeah, Greg. So what I'm seeing is with the service provider application of like looking at what they're trying to use OpenFlow to provide our edge functionality, I think that application is maybe a few years out. Where the sweet spot is more so in the data center, you can actually kind of look at this requirement of talking to the vSwitch and enabling OpenFlow, you know, in the shorter term. And one of those applications is firewall. And I think you raise a good point of the actual ability to punt a packet up to the controller, process it, and push down a flow mod based on that rule. The dynamic nature of that needs to happen very quickly. So the performance of the control plane between the controller is certainly will be impacted by that. The other component of that is OpenFlow is based on table processing. OpenFlow 1.0 describes a single table. So you do a match and action and you're done. OpenFlow 1.1 introduced multi-table, where you're pipelining between tables where you can do multiple actions. So you could have a firewall policy table that's followed by another table that's doing a forwarding action. And I think that this is an exciting area, OpenFlow, but this is where it gets into challenges implementing it in hardware. Not all ASIC-based devices can support this kind of action. So what I'm kind of curious is, will those firewall kind of based applications require a multi-table? And that means they need to be a 1.1 or better. And then will they be only implemented in soft switches? Or, you know, at what point will we have hardware that can really be doing true multi-table processing?
Yeah, that's probably a couple of certainly next generation at least. I don't think any of the current generation of chips can do that sort of processing. But the next generation might do some. But whether it can do as much as 1.3 once, it seems unlikely. We're more likely to see it, as you say, in software-enabled switches.
Certainly, it's available now in software-based switches. And then it's out there that have network processor-based equipment. And then we recently did a webinar with Intel where they promoted their Alta product line. And with that reference design, it does actually support multi-table. So I think, you know, some of these devices are starting to become available where you could implement, you know, true multi-table capability. If you've chatted with Kurt Beckman from Brocade, they're defining the TTPs where you can actually kind of communicate or negotiate the capability of the device so the controller understands what that hardware is actually capable of.
Is that through OpenFlow or is that more of an OFconfig component?
Yeah, the current proposal is more of through OFConfig. OFConfig is kind of a management protocol built on top Bootstrap on OpenFlow device, give it some basic configuration before the actual OpenFlow protocol starts. But my understanding is that the TTP communication would occur during that phase. So the controller can kind of push down a requirement, hey, do you support this particular TTP? The device could respond back, and then that negotiation would be complete prior to trying to run the OpenFlow application.
Hey, Michael, it's a little bit of a tangent, but I'm kind of curious. Are you guys talking about any kind of further abstraction up, and, you know, whether it's a Phrenetic or something even on top of that, like a Netcore? I know Ed Crabb's kind of big on that from Google.
You know, Google and a few of the other folks were originally kind of working on that in the framework, not the framework group, in the abstract forwarding working group. They were really kind of looking at something more robust like that, and they kind of decided to kind of back off and just start with TTPs and then expand from there. So I think there still is some, you know, desire to have kind of a more formal, you know, kind of programming you're describing. They just decided to kind of back off it because it was such a big undertaking.
So get the foundation of the house set and then start building on top of that.
Exactly.
So I assume some of the Silicon Foundries, they're all pretty engaged, say the Broadcoms, the Intels, the Cadiums even.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can speak from, you know, with regards to the ONF, Broadcom, Intel, Marvell have been all involved. Broadcom were participating. Certainly they're involved at, you know, to the level of, certainly, single table processing is already available from most devices. I think where we're looking at processing, where there's still some question going forward, because you certainly can implement like a 1.2 or a 1.3 OpenFlow, however, just limit it to single table. When you get into multi-table, that's where the complexities start to come out.
So you mentioned earlier that, you know, there's definitely limitations when you start doing layer 2 and layer 3 flow mods at the same time. As a network engineer, how do I integrate a BGP peering into OpenFlow?
Yeah, that's a really interesting area, Brent. I think there's beginning to be some, you know, some work going on to say, can I truly integrate something like layer 3 BGP with OpenFlow? And, you know, can I translate BGP route table info into OpenFlow? And I know there's several companies actually working on that exact thing. Get, you know, purely from an OpenFlow perspective, it kind of flat the stack in a way where you can match on input port, you can match on Ethernet aspects of the header, match on IP. So OpenFlow doesn't really kind of, it's kind of agnostic as to what layer you want to work with. It has, you know, feature and functionality to match on any of those things. This also ties into a performance impact, because the more fields you match on, the more space it takes up in the hardware if you're actually pushing down in a hardware. So when you look at something like a flow table capacity, if you're just matching on a VLAN ID, you know, you could have much higher table capacity if you were matching on a port, a MAC address, a VLAN ID, and a destination IP. So the fact of, well, what are you matching on and what are you pushing into a forwarding table certainly will have an impact on the scale and performance of the forwarding table. You know, OpenFlow right now really just defines that communication from a controller down to the switch and explicitly telling it what to do via a command set, but that the intelligence and the application development happen above the controller, right? Where if you start to talk about integrating a BGP route reflector or a BGP router with OpenFlow, that it's going to have to talk through an API to a controller or have an integrated controller. As you start to look at, you know, if it's a firewall, if it's a router, some additional policy engine that wants to talk OpenFlow, It's going to have to go through an API to a controller or have an integrated controller to push down those forward.
We've probably covered most of the details in detail. Perhaps the final question or the final topic that we want to cover today is, what are the next steps for testing and interoperability in the area that you're working in, Michael? And if you want to sort of hazard a few guesses as to what's next for OpenFlow in more general terms, is there areas there that we can talk about today?
Sure, Greg. You know, from the ONF perspective, we've done two events now that have been largely focused on OpenFlow 1.0. And I think the industry really wants to move forward really to 1.3. So although we've done some initial testing with 1.2 at the last event, 1.3 is where the ONF kind of paused in its development to say, we want vendors to catch up. So 1.3 has feature set that service providers want because it adds in the ability to do match and action on MPLS header. It adds in the ability to do match and action on VLAN stacking, as well as iPonents were added over 1.1, 1.2, and then enhanced in 1.3. So I think that's where the interoperability events that we're looking at for spring and fall are going to be focused on applications in that space. I think that some of the discussion points we had here, which are firewall applications, potentially applications of BGP or other policy engines that need to talk through a controller and push down flow table entries, can actually interwork end-to-end are going to be some things we look at. And then finally, from a conformance standpoint, in the beginning of next year, we hope to have our conformance program for 1.0 in full swing, begin to offer a 1.2 and or 1.3 certification by mid-year.
Okay, that would be good. A lot of people said that 1.3 wasn't doable, and that would be good to know which vendors are able to deliver that and have a compliance regime by which to measure that as a consumer.
Absolutely. And, you know, within the ONF, they're beginning to define a 1.4, and then there's talk of a 2.0. So I think that it's a really exciting time for OpenFlow. I mean, it reminds me of the early days of MPLS where, you know, it was just kind of designed to be faster processing, and all of a sudden, you know, hey, we can do VPNs. Hey, we can do traffic engineering. Hey, we can do all these cool things with it. Certainly OpenFlow is becoming one of those kind of, you know, game-changing paradigm type of protocols.
The risk here is that recently we've seen a diversification in the protocols around OpenFlow. So OpenFlow has always been the one southbound API, and now there's some others coming along. Well, you know, we won't talk about them here. And one of the things that, you know, I'm concerned about, or I think the ONF should be concerned about, is if they move at IEEE speed, which is to say, you know, diddling around for years, not talking to anybody and checking out their own belly button fluff, you know, the world will go right past them and develop their own solutions. You know, the IEEE is still dicking around with VEB and VEPR, and, you know, what the hell's all that?
No, absolutely. And I can tell you it's really refreshing to work within the ONF because things actually move quite fast. There's no voting. You know, it's just we just make decisions and move forward. And it's really a community that's led by end users. The board has no vendors on it. And so that really helps to kind of try to keep the ONF community aligned with what the end user service providers, data center operators want from OpenFlow. So I think the pace is going to be moving along quite fast. I think one thing that was concerning is, what if it moves too fast? If you get an new OpenFlow version every 6 months, that's not implemented.
Yeah, no,
the
that's
vendor
a
community.
That's a viable concern. Too fast, but at this point in time, there's not too much that's actually shipping. You know, this is the old story. At what point do you actually standardize, when the innovation cycle is complete, or do you standardize on the way through so customers can join in? And that's a thin edge. You know, that's a razor that you kind of have to walk. If you go too slow, customers will want more. And if you go too fast, then people won't know when to move in because they'll always think there's more coming behind it. And that's a problem that you've got to have.
Absolutely. It is a problem. I think what we're seeing is, you know, real 1.0-based products and implementations occurring, although it's fairly limited in feature set, so it will be limited in the applications. As we get richer feature set with the additional OpenFlow versions, we're actually starting to add in things like OpenFlow version negotiation and multi-controllers and controllers that can actually talk to OpenFlow devices of different versions. So I think that will help to, you know, have a little bit more backwards compatibility and have a kind of a phased approach into implementing and adopting OpenFlow.
Well, I think we should pretty much call it a show there. First of all, thanks to Michael for joining us on today's show. Anything you want to tell the audience as we wrap up?
just that through, you can follow the opennetworking.org as well as at OpenFlow is the Twitter handle. For some of the stuff that I tweet and blog, it's posted through our ixiacom.com website as well as at ixiacom.
Thanks very much for joining us today. Brent, what are you playing with in the next few weeks?
A little downtime, but probably writing over the holidays. I want to say thanks to Kurt Beckman for lining us up with Michael for getting us on here. This has been really enjoyable. I appreciate the time, Greg, and hope you have a good holiday, sir.
Thank you.
Lay low.
Yeah, that's the one. And, of course, you can find more about the Today Show on the Packet Pushers on their website at packetpushers.net. You can chat to us on our forum at forum.packetpushers.net. Don't forget to follow us on our Twitter handle at Packet Pushers. And remember that, as always, too much networking would never be enough.